Good morning, board members, Lawton staff, and the public. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Lawton Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Jeff Lux, and I'm a board member. Our acting chair, Rob Pierce, is attending this meeting remotely via Zoom, so Rob asked that I preside over today's meeting. Rob will remain on camera for the entire portion of this public meeting unless there's a poor internet connection or it'd be technologically impracticable to do. Consistent with the requirements of the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act, Rob, can you please let us know whether there are any individuals 18 years or older present in the same room as you, as well as the general nature of your relationship with those individuals? Rob?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, for chairing the meeting that I couldn't be there today. There is no one in the room with me today.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Today's board meeting is being conducted in person from Barstow and via Zoom. AGP Video is hosting our board meeting. Thank you very much, AGP. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other members of the regional board here today. Amy Horn from Truckee.
Good morning.
Rick Deaver from Crestline.
Good morning.
Kimberly Cox from Hellendale.
Good morning.
Thank you, and thank you all for being here. We have a quorum physically present in Barstow for today's meeting, and welcome everyone. Our executive board staff are also here today in Barstow, including our executive officer, Ben Letton, our legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga, and our assistant board clerk, Jasmine Enerson. We'll also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items as they arise. For those who are present and wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card in the back of the room and hand the card to Jasmine Enerson. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment via Zoom, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Ariel LaFarga, and be in the Zoom meeting room. If you think you might be interested in commenting via Zoom, please contact our board clerk promptly at ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. That's ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. For those joining us via Zoom, your camera will be turned off and you'll be muted until it's your turn to speak. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you'll be placed on mute again. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. All right. With that, we'll go to our first item, item three, reports by Water Board. To accommodate State Water Board Member Nicole Morgan's schedule, we're going to begin with item three, reports by the Water Board. We'll go back to two in a moment. The Water Board members will provide updates to the Water Board and the public on events and activities of interest. Board Member Morgan, you may begin when you are ready, and thank you very much for being here.
And thank you, Board Member Lux. Good morning, Board. Thank you for accommodating my schedule. The State Board is also meeting this morning. Our meeting also began at 9 a.m. And so today, the State Board is holding a public workshop on the draft Tuolumne River Voluntary Agreement Scientific Basis Report. During the public workshop, staff from the State Water Board will provide a presentation followed by the opportunity for public comments. The draft scientific basis report is a necessary prerequisite before the board may consider the proposed voluntary agreement for the Tuolumne River, which would require potential updates to the water quality control plan for the San Francisco Bay, Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta Estuary, also known as the Bay Delta Plan. Public written comments must be submitted no later than Friday, November 7, 2025. There is additional information on the program webpage. Let's see here. So the Delta Conveyance Project is still going. This is under ex parte, so I cannot answer questions. However, on October 22nd, our administrative hearing office released the 8th Amendment hearing notice for the hearings. A site visit is scheduled for November 10th, and the next hearing will be on November 17th, if necessary, via Zoom. Additional information can be found on that project webpage. Yesterday, the State Board adopted the fiscal year 2025-26 fund expenditure plan for the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. On October 29th, under authority of the Deputy Director of the State Water Board, the State Water Board's Division of Drinking Water And so that would be Darren Bohemus issued new and revised notification levels for PFOA, PFOS, and then the PFHX, SPFH, PFHXA. And so those response levels have been issued, and they can be found on the program webpage. Notifications also were sent out via our email list. On November 18th, the State Board will hold a public workshop during its regularly scheduled board meeting. The workshop item is scheduled to begin no earlier than 1 p.m. Staff have invited experts and practitioners to provide updates on current practices and highlight case studies that demonstrate practical approaches to overcoming regulatory, funding, and technical barriers for stormwater capture. And so topics will include an overview of the State Water Board strategy to optimize resource management of our stormwater program, also called our STORMS program, examples of local capture and use projects such as public lands irrigation, school greening, and discussion of funding opportunities, including stormwater credit systems, state financial assistance. Members of the public are encouraged to attend and provide input. So again, that will be at our November 18th State Water Board meeting, starting no earlier than 1 p.m. So just a quick update on Tulare Lake Groundwater Basin, the SGMA intervention. So the work continues. On Wednesday, October 29th, the California 5th District Court of Appeals issued two largely favorable opinions addressing the board's appeal of preliminary court orders in the Kings County Farm Bureau versus State Water Resources Control Board case. In that case, Kings County Farm Bureau challenges the board's designation of the Tulare Lake Subbasin as probationary under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, known as SGMA. A preliminary injunction from September 13, 2024 from Kings County Superior Court had barred any actions by the State Board related to the probationary designation in Tulare Lake Subbasin, but did not reverse the probationary designation. The injunction has now been set aside. The State Board staff can now resume working with local groundwater managers to resolve issues and the subbasin's groundwater sustainability plan. Staff will also consider next steps for moving forward with SGMA implementation in the subbasin. So that's all I have for you today. If you have any quick questions, I can answer those.
Board members, do you have any questions for Board Member Morgan?
No questions.
Hi, Nicole, it's good to see you. This is Amy talking, and it's sort of related to the Tulare Basin issue, but not directly, which is, do you know whether DWR has any plans to reopen the designation of the risk levels for groundwater basins? We have a basin that is set at very low, which concerns me because of the amount of population growth that's happening in that basin. And so I was just wondering if there was any plans for DWR to reopen those designations.
All basins go through I'm going to call it a cycle. And so, you know, it's once their plan is approved, does not mean that I don't want to say approved forever, but it's a cycle. And so they start implementing. DWR does revisit those plans and take a look to make sure that it is still relevant. And so, they will revisit the plan and see, you know, is it still relevant? And are there any updates that need to occur?
Thank you.
Other board members, do you have questions for Board Member Morgan? Rob at home? No question. Okay, thank you very much, Board Member Morgan. Appreciate you being here, and thanks for adjusting your schedule.
All right, thank you all.
All right, now we'll proceed to updates from board members. And why don't we start on Zoom with Board Member Pierce. Any updates?
I have no updates today, thank you.
Thanks. Board Member Horn?
Thanks, I have no updates.
Board Member Deaver?
No updates.
And Board Member Cox?
Nothing, thank you.
And I don't either, so we're a very exciting, updating bunch. Yes. So this is good. All right. Thank you. So now we're going to turn back to our item one, which is public forum. And any person may address the Water Board regarding a matter within the Water Board's jurisdiction that's not related to an item on the meeting agenda or currently pending before the Water Board. Do we have any speaker cards for that one, Ariel?
We do not.
Do not. Anyone in the public? Anyone out there on the, no one out there on the Zoom? Okay. Anyone else in here? All right, hearing none, we will move on to item two. And this is consideration of the Water Board will consider adopting the minutes of the regular meeting of August 28, 2025. And we've got those behind enclosure one. And August 28th minutes, any conversation about that before we entertain a motion? Board Member Pierce? No, looks like no. Anyone here? All right, entertain a motion on the minutes.
I'll move adoption of the August minutes.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Excuse me. Board Member Lux. Yeah, we have to do a roll call vote.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start. Board Member Pierce?
Aye.
Board Member Horn?
Aye.
Board Member Deaver?
Aye.
Board Member Cox?
I'll abstain from those minutes. Unfortunately, I had to miss the meeting.
And I will vote aye, Board Member Lux. All right. Does that work? Minutes pass. I'll pass those back. All right. Thank you so much. Moving along, item four. Item four was originally a consent calendar item, but we've moved it on to the regular calendar to get a bit of an update. So we'll turn to item four, the change of name and or ownership of facilities with waste discharge requirements. This item's been moved off the uncontested calendar, the consent calendar, so that staff can present a suggested change to the order. And board will consider orders updating these discharge facilities. There's a number of them, and I believe we're going to have a short staff presentation. Is that correct? And Christina Guerra? You are up.
Hi, good morning, board members. Christina Guerra, senior engineering geologist here in our Victorville office. So we are recommending changes to the item to remove board order R6V-2002-007 for the Calaveras Cement Company plant from this order. The change to the item four is necessary because it is not clear who is the current owner and operator of the facility. So our suggested language is as follows. So if you go over to bait stamp page 4-9. And then we've also pulled it up here on the screen for you. Great. So staff suggests a change to finding two. The finding currently reads, the 10 facilities and their respective board orders are listed in attachment A of this board order. It would change to the 9 facilities and their respective board orders are listed in attachment A of this board order. And then also on bait stamp page 4-12, staff suggests a change to attachment A, page 2 of 2. The fourth row of the table that starts with the cell R6V-2002-007 and ends with the cell Tehachapi Cement LLC would be removed. Staff recommend the adoption of the board proposed board order with those changes.
Okay, thank you very much. Maybe while you're up, we'll see if there's any questions from board members. Of staff. Any board members have questions about the changes or about the item? Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for the changes. All right, this is time for call for any public comment on this item. Do we have any cards or anyone wanting to comment on this one? Nope. anyone in the public? All right. Board, conversation, questions, or I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt the order as amended.
I'll second that.
Is this also roll call?
Yes.
Start at this end.
Board Member Cox.
Aye.
Board Member Deaver.
Aye.
Board Member Horn.
Aye.
Board Member Pierce.
Aye.
And aye. I'm also Jeff Lux. Aye. So passes 5-0. Thank you very much. And thanks for the changes to bring us up to date. All right. We're now on item 5. This is the consent or uncontested calendar item. adoption of closure and post-closure waste discharge requirements for Benton Crossing Class 3 landfill and the sludge landform in Mono County. Would any board member or anyone from the public like to request discussion and remove this item from the consent calendar to be considered separately? Okay. Members of the public participating in Zoom, we have no one?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. We can entertain a motion on the consent calendar item number 5 as well.
I'll move approval of the item.
I'll second it.
All right. Board Member Cox, let's start here.
Aye.
Board Member Deaver.
Aye.
Board Member Horn.
Aye.
And Board Member Pierce.
Aye.
And I also register aye. So once again, 5-0 vote. Thank you very much. All right. So done with consent. Moving on to the larger items of the day, we're going to get to item 6, which is the Marine Corps Logistics Base Barstow Environmental Cleanup Program Overview. And we have staff here to present an overview of the program. This is an informational item, but an important one with a lot of moving parts. And welcome.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Mark Allen. I'm a Water Board Project Manager working on the Environmental Restoration Program at Marine Corps Logistics Base Barstow. This is an informational item, and no formal action is requested, though Water Board members may provide direction to staff. This is the first in a planned series of informational items on specific DOD sites within the Lahontan region that will be presented to the board. Next slide. The purpose of this presentation is to present an overview of MCLB Barstow's history, current operational use, and to describe the various remedies selected at each operable unit. I will also provide a summary of the current base-wide per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances investigation. Next slide. Established as the Marine Corps Depot of Supplies on December 28, 1942, the Navy turned it over to the U.S. Marine Corps as a storage site for supplies and equipment for Fleet Marine Forces in the Pacific Theater during World War II. In October 1946, operational mission at Nebo Main Base had outgrown its facilities and approximately 2,000 acres of land was annexed 7 miles east of the base, resulting in the establishment of the Yermo Annex. In November 1978, the base was renamed to emphasize its broad logistics support mission of staging, storage, and maintenance of supplies and equipment used by the United States Marine Corps. Next slide. MCLB Barstow is located near the city of Barstow in San Bernardino County, California, within the central Mojave Desert, and is approximately 33 miles northeast of Victorville. The base is comprised of three principal sites: Nebo Main Base, which functions as base headquarters and is the main facility for administration, storage, recreational activities, and housing functions for base personnel; Yermo Annex, which is primarily a storage and industrial complex; and the third site, the rifle range, is utilized for rifle and pistol qualifications for active duty military personnel. The city of Barstow is labeled to the west and the town of Daggett to the east. You can see the Mojave River running from west to east through the center of the figure. Next slide. Here's a close-up of Yermo Annex. As you can see, the main railway is on the right side of this figure with a northeast-southwest orientation. When I think of MCLB Barstow, I think of the trains. Massive, sprawling trains, stretching the horizon, transporting military equipment and vehicles. The trains are unloaded, the equipment is staged, cleaned, serviced, reloaded onto the train, and transport it to its next destination. This is the primary function of MCLB Barstow. Next slide. These next two slides have been, you have seen before in Alonzo's DOD program overview. We would like to take a little time to reemphasize the CERCLA process and that the military uses a lot of acronyms. Specific to MCLB Barstow, there are a couple of remediation systems, a groundwater extraction and treatment system in use, referred to as a GETS. There's a soil vapor extraction system in use, SVE. Also common contaminants include tetrachloroethene and trichloroethene, which are PCE and TCE. And the Navy and the regulatory agencies all signed the Federal Facilities Agreement, the FFA, where all parties agree to conduct the Environmental Restoration Program, also called the ERP. These are a few of the acronyms I'm likely to use throughout the rest of my presentation. This acronym list is also included in your board packet on BATE stamp 6-5. Next slide. Again, the CERCLA process. We have an awareness that there's been a discharge of contaminants out of site, and that triggers preliminary site assessments, site inspections, and remedial investigations where we try to figure out what, where, and how much. During the feasibility study, we begin to assess options for a path forward at the site, and the record of decision, we all agree, a path forward for the environmental restoration at a site. There are considerable discussions between the Navy and the regulatory agencies during the investigation phase, the feasibility study, and the record of decision, where we try to account for data gaps and formulate the most appropriate path forward. Once the record of decision has been finalized, the process is usually a little more streamlined. There's still the remedial design, construction, and operation, but the primary approach has already been agreed upon. After the ROD has been signed, there's a 5-year review process where every 5 years after signing the ROD, the Navy and the regulatory agencies review the site's progress and evaluate remedies' effectiveness. All OUs at MCLB Barstow have signed RODs and are currently in the 5-year review process. For ease of use, this is also available in your board packet on BATE stamp 6-9. Next slide. An operable unit is a distinct portion of a Superfund site that has been addressed via discrete actions per that operable unit. Operable units in CERCLA are designated one of two ways, usually by geography or affected media. Most of the DOD bases within the Lahontan region are designated according to geography, i.e., the north portion of the base is OU1, the south portion is OU2, for example. But at MCLB Barstow, the OUs are designated according to media, such as groundwater, soil, and soil vapor. There are 7 OUs at Barstow. OUs 1 and 2 are groundwater contamination between Yermo Annex and Nebo Main Base, respectively. A ROD for OUs 1 and 2 was finalized in 1998. OUs 3 and 5 consist of soil contamination at Yermo Annex. OUs 4 and 6 consist of soil contamination at Nebo Main Base. RODs for OUs 3 through 6 were finalized in 1997. OU-7 primarily addresses the soil vapor contamination at Nebo Main Base, but then it also became a catch-all for new soil and groundwater sites as well. OU-7 also finalized a record of decision in 2014. Specific sites at OUs are referred to as CAOCs, CERCLA Areas of Concern. Next slide. This slide summarizes the major remedy components for each operable unit. OUs 1 and 2 remedies include groundwater extraction, air sparging, and soil vapor extraction. For remedies selected for soil contamination at OUs 3 through 6 and OU 7 as well, there are 3 general categories of remedies selection chosen for soil sites. 1, the soils were evaluated for risk to human health and the environment, and with a low risk assessment, the no further action designation was selected. 2, contaminated soils were excavated and removed from site and disposed of off property. The remaining soil was evaluated for risk to human health and the environment, and with a low risk assessment, the no further action option was selected. And 3, soils were evaluated for risk. Risk was present. Land use and institutional controls were put in place to mitigate that risk. Land use controls always involve recording the nature and extent of soil contamination with the base engineer so no further developments will occur at that site. Also, common controls include signs notifying personnel of areas of contamination, fences around areas of contamination, and even concrete caps above contaminated soil, preventing migration of dust and contaminant. OU7, again being a catch-all OU, remedies include soil vapor extraction, monitor natural attenuation, excavation, and land use controls. Next slide. Here's Nebo Main Base. Purple and orange represent soil contamination sites under OUs 4 and 5. Turquoise represents groundwater contamination at Nebo, and yellow represents OU7, soil vapor, as well as various soil and groundwater contamination sites. If you look at that turquoise circle in the upper middle portion of the figure, that represents the North Nebo plume. As seen in the next slide, that plume's footprint has been reduced considerably. Next slide. Here's a figure of the life cycle of the Nebo Main Base North PCE-TCE plume. PCE is shown on the top and TCE on bottom. The remedy selected for this plume was air sparging with SVE. Air sparging includes injecting air or propane into aquifer right below the water table to help volatilize the contaminants in the aquifer. And soil vapor extraction includes wells that target the pore space in between soil directly above the water table to remove and treat the volatilized contaminants. And as you can see, it's been very successful. The hotspot shown in the upper right 2021 square is actually mostly remediated at this point. Recently, the Navy injected iron amendments at that location, and the results were very positive, with both PCE and TCE falling under contaminant screening levels. And I would like to acknowledge the Navy's remediation efforts in improving groundwater conditions at Nebo, as there are sensitive receptors down gradient, such as the Mojave River. Next slide. Here you can see the footprint of the OUs at Yermo Annex. Green and red represent areas evaluated for soil contamination, OUs 3 and 5. Blue represents the footprint of the groundwater contamination at Yermo Annex, a PCE-TCE plume in the northeast portion of Yermo. The blue represents the plume's footprint over its entire life cycle or historical extent of the plume. Currently, the plume is much smaller. The next slide will show its current footprint. Next slide. Here's a figure showing the life cycle of the Yermo groundwater plume. PCE is shown on the top and TCE on bottom. If you look at the top left 1996 PCE square, where there's a light lime green color, that is the general area where the Navy installed a groundwater extraction and treatment system, where they pump out the groundwater, treat it by running the water through canisters filled with carbon that removes the contaminants via adsorption, and then the treated water is injected back into the aquifer. The system began operation in 2000, and you can see it's been very effective. If you look to the top right PCE square in 2024, there's still a hotspot present. That hotspot is on the fringe of the area of influence of the extraction system. The Navy is currently conducting an in-situ chemical reduction pilot study to see if injecting amendments at that location may be a viable remediation of that hotspot in the future. Next slide. PFAS is being handled as a somewhat its own operable unit. There's already been several PFAS sampling events at MCLB Barstow. A preliminary assessment was conducted in 2019, and an initial PFAS remedial investigation was completed in 2022. There's another sampling event scheduled for December of this year, and there will likely be other future sampling events as we continue to characterize the nature and extent of PFAS contamination at MCLB Barstow. Next slide. The most recent PFAS sampling event sampled 48 groundwater monitoring wells and over 120 soil samples from 30 locations. 8 sites were moved forward to the next phase of the remedial investigation. There have been impacts to soil and groundwater. There are 2 PFAS hotspots at Nebo Main Base. One is a former fire station, and the other is a former fire training area. Aqueous film forming foam, AFFF firefighting foam, is a common source of PFAS. These sites have groundwater PFOA concentrations of approximately 1,000 nanograms per liter and 7,110 nanograms per liter, respectively. The current maximum contaminant level for PFOA and PFOS is 4 nanograms per liter for each individual compound, and the maximum concentration levels for PFHXS is 10 nanograms per liter. The table shown lists the maximum concentrations reported at MCLB Barstow for 5 common PFAS contaminants. All the groundwater concentrations listed are above their respective screening levels. The soil concentrations for PFOS and PFOA are above their screening level, while the remaining soil concentrations listed for the other compounds are below their respective screening levels. Next slide. Here's the figure of the various sites being evaluated at NEBO. It also shows the location of groundwater and soil samples taken. I highlighted the former fire training area on the right and the former fire station on the left. Other areas being evaluated include the historical industrial areas and wastewater treatment areas. Next slide. And here's the figure of the sites being evaluated at Yermo. Areas being evaluated consist of a fire station, former waste areas, and the wastewater treatment plant. So far, there has not been significant PFAS concentrations reported at Yermo Annex. Next slide. Thank you for your time. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that very much. Why don't we start while Mark's up here with board questions, and then we'll see if there are some public comments, and we'll get back to board comments. Board Member Cox, questions?
Thank you. Are there any potable wells near those two PFAS hotspots?
No. There are some wells off base that are downgradient, but neither of them are active because of the water table is below those wells. So, no, there is a well on NEBO that is used to water the golf course, but it's not used as potable water.
Okay, so it's non-potable. And I love the fact that you put the picture of the Marine Corps mounted color guard. That is the only mounted color guard in the entire Marine Corps, and it is domiciled right here in Barstow.
Thank you. Is that it? Board Member Deaver, questions?
No questions, but a good presentation. Thank you.
Board Member Cox. I'm sorry. Board Member Horton. Going the wrong direction here.
Thank you. So I don't want to do math on the fly up here, so I'm going to ask you. Once groundwater contamination, soil contamination, and soil vapor contamination is identified in a site like this, how long does it take to get to the end of the until this is cleaned up to whatever the standard needs to be?
Yeah, it's a great effort. And, you know, in some ways, MCLB Barstow is kind of an easier site because it's an alluvium, which is an easier subsurface to work in. And even then, it's taken us 30 years to get to where we are right now, you know. So it takes a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, it's really stunning to me with several of the items we have in this agenda that once this contamination occurs, it takes a really long time to clean it up. So better not to let it happen in the first place. So just that's it.
Thank you. Board Member Pierce, questions or comment?
No questions, but that was really a super informative presentation. Thank you.
Mark, I've got just kind of one. It's a kind of a general question for my edification, but in looking at the Yermo and the NEBO sites, I'm assuming the plume, both location, the extent, kind of the shape of it, all that's based on groundwater modeling?
Yeah, the shape's based off the subsurface and the groundwater direction.
Yeah, and those are modeled.
I wouldn't say they're modeled too much at these sites, to be honest. They were characterized, you know, okay, where they measured where the plume was and, you know, remediated from there.
Right. And so to get that, you've got a bunch of monitoring wells to determine that. How give me a just ballpark for your MOA and or either one of them. How many monitoring wells are we talking about? And
maybe 100 at each, you know.
100 each.
Which is a lot less than maybe some of our other DOD sites where there's thousands,
right,
of monitoring wells.
And presumably some of those 100 or many of those 100 will show no contamination, therefore the plume isn't there, right? So it's the absence of the plume is as important a piece of information as the presence of it or the concentration or whatever.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had. Thanks for the presentation. Appreciate it. Anything else from board members? All right. Public comment on this one. Are there any cards on this one or anyone on Zoom or any?
No.
No? And anyone in the public give a final shot? All right. Well, that concludes item 6. Thank you very much, Mark Allen, and thank you, board members, for the good questions. Okay. We will kind of keep rolling. Let's keep rolling along. I don't want to get on to the next item. Item 7, which is the Mojave River Pyrotechnics Barstow perchlorate update. This one is also informational. Water Board staff will provide an update on the Mojave River Pyrotechnics perchlorate project. The presentation will include information about project history, ongoing remediation efforts, future plans. It's an informational item. The board will not be asked to take formal action, although we could provide direction to staff. Lena, thank you for being here.
Great. Okay. You guys can hear me? Okay. Hello, members of the board and members of the public. My name is Melina Hov. I'm an engineering geologist in the Department of Defense Site Cleanup Unit, and today I'm going to be providing an update on the Mojave River Pyrotechnics Barstow perchlorate project. This is an informational item. No water board action is required, but as always, we welcome any feedback or any comments. I just wanted to note that today we also have our consultants, APDAM. I have Tom Perina here in the audience today to support any questions about the remedial efforts out at the project site. And then also on the Zoom online platform, we have Division of Financial Assistance staff, Jamie Ritchie, and then Saru Podel Arachia, and they can help out with any questions about any funding and all of that. Next slide, please. Today's presentation will include an outline of the background, the investigation and remediation efforts, ongoing work, and next steps for this project. Next slide, please. This map is the most current plume map, which is also provided in your board agenda package on Bait Stamp 7-5. This provides a general overview of the project area, as well as noting some of the sites that I'll mention throughout the presentation today outlined here. So on the northwest corner of the map, you can see the perchlorate source area there. And then also in the middle, we have the Golden State Water Company well, which is where perchlorate was initially discovered in 2010, which is the source of the plume here. Since 2010, that well has been shut off and not in service. The southeast portion of the map is the Soap Mine Road area, which is highlighted, where residents are currently impacted by the perchlorate plume. This is around 2 miles from the source area itself. And then in the next slide, I will discuss a little bit more detail about the history and the background leading up to present day about the project area. Next slide, please. So to provide a brief overview of the site's history, this timeline outlines significant events leading to present day. So in 2010, we have the perchlorate discovery and the initial beginnings of the US EPA and Water Board investigation. So in 2010, perchlorate was discovered in the Golden State Water Company well, a distribution system, which serves the greater city of Barstow area. And then after that perchlorate discovery, the impacted well was shut off and taken offline of the distribution system. And then during the investigations in 2012, it revealed that the perchlorate source was a property that belonged to the owner of the former Mojave River Pyrotechnics Company, a company that manufactured various pyrotechnics devices, and perchlorate is used in the manufacturing of those devices. So suspected disposal of that perchlorate waste at the property impacted the soil. So recommendations from these Water Board and EPA investigations required perchlorate soil removal at the site, and then further delineation of the plume, a groundwater monitoring program, and a feasibility study to select remediation technology. And then moving on to 2012, the high concentrations of perchlorate in soil at the source area were excavated and disposed of. And during this time, the Water Board also initiated an internal groundwater sampling program where staff sampled both residential and groundwater monitoring wells, and that program is still ongoing to this day. And in 2016, moving forward, the Water Board staff had applied for and received a $2.67 million from the State Water Board Site Cleanup Subaccount Fund, and this funding is to be used to characterize the site, develop a conceptual site model, conduct a feasibility study, and create a remediation work plan. The funding also supports all of the ongoing remediation efforts, which will be detailed later in the presentation as well. And so moving forward in 2021, the focus feasibility study and remedial work plan was finalized, and the study and work plan evaluated the possible remedial technologies and alternatives for the site. And this includes details about all the planned remedial work and work being done from 2023 to present. And again, in the next section, we'll talk about some of the current investigations and remedial work and all of that detail. Next slide. So in our last executive officer's report in June 2024, we provided an update on the Barstow perchlorate project and the remediation efforts. Today, I'll be providing more details about the recent investigations and remediation efforts, including the installation of new monitoring wells, tracer tests, the remedial injections going on in the source area for the soil, and some of the soil confirmation sampling as part of the remedial work. And then again, all of these efforts are funded by that Senate Bill 445 funding. Next slide. As part of a groundwater investigation for the project area, four groundwater monitoring wells were installed in 2023 to assist with plume and groundwater monitoring. An example of one of those newly installed monitoring wells are there on the screen as well as on your copies of the PowerPoint. In December 2023 and January 2024, Aptum conducted tracer tests on the wells in the area. And using data and modeling, Aptum kind of uses this tracer test to determine hydraulic properties of the aquifer in this project area. So next slide. Here is a close look at the project area, and this is taken from one of our work plans and work plan tech memos. So it illustrates the Crooks Avenue and Webster Road area. So these are the areas where the new monitoring wells were installed. And so you can kind of see there in both areas, there are those black diamonds running along the transects of the plume. So the goal of this was to get hydropunch samples of two transects to determine the highest perchlorate areas, because that's where we wanted the groundwater monitoring wells to be installed. So this was kind of helped our consultants hone in on where best to put the groundwater monitoring wells. And then those were later installed two along Crooks and then two on Webster Road. And then, so again, the tracer tests were conducted with those wells as well. It involved injecting water and dissolved sodium chloride into six of the wells in the area. And then the tracer tests provided more information about hydraulic properties in the area. So these wells continued to be monitored annually or semi-annually by Aptum. And these wells are to be used to support any future investigative activities as well for the project site. Next slide. So source area remediation. Based on the focus feasibility study and the work plan completed, the selected source area remediation for soil is in situ bioremediation. And so the selected technology is emulsified vegetable oil, and this includes injection events followed by confirmation soil sampling. So a little bit about the EVO and the emulsified vegetable oil. So it degrades the perchlorate through aerobic and anaerobic respiration processes. So I try to explain this as best I can. The EVO acts as a food source or a carbon source for the naturally occurring perchlorate-reducing bacteria in the environment. And so when the bacteria or microbes consume the oil, they start using up the perchlorate as an oxygen source. So for a reminder, perchlorate is ClO4 negative. So as their oxygen source, this breaks down the perchlorate as a result into the oxygen and chlorides. So that's a bit of a science there for you guys this morning. And a part of the selected remedy includes a series of the injection vents, as mentioned, with the confirmation soil sampling and the post-injection events. So the soil sampling includes analyzing for perchlorate in soil, total organic carbon, and moisture content. And then the soil samples are used to assess the post-injection conditions and monitor the remediation effectiveness. Next slide. So this slide kind of summarizes all of the injection events so far since 2023. You can see in the initial injections, we focused on deep and shallow, and then moving on to the other injection events, we're focused on the deep, greater than 8 feet below ground for injections. So the initial injections were completed in 2023, and then most recently in 2025, we also included injections with bioaugmentation to kind of help speed along the perchlorate reducing processes. I'll go into a little bit more detail about the bioaugmentation later on as well, but I just do want to point out, you know, we have a photo of one of the injection points here at one of the injection events, and then kind of get a photo of the emulsified vegetable oil. I think for me, I was very surprised about how milky colored it is, but that's that. So next slide. So here we're looking at the conceptual design for the field activities. This is also taken from the focus feasibility study and a work plan. So it shows the site layout of the source area, so property, and then also the two areas of the garden treatment area and the trash pile area. So these are the two areas we're focused on for remediation and those injection events that I mentioned. So the blue and yellow areas highlight the shallow treatment zones that were where injections were conducted in that initial round of injections, and then the green boxes indicate the deep locations of the treatment areas. And then in the next couple slides, we're going to take a look at the deep zone areas a little bit more closely, just because those are where we've been focusing a lot of our efforts on most recently. So next slide, please. Here we're looking at the garden area. This highlights the deep zone injection points. Those are indicated by the green circles and the confirmation sample locations. Basically, what I kind of wanted to show here is, you know, there are multiple injection points and they're kind of dispersed throughout that area or site area. So, you know, earlier in the presentation, I also kind of mentioned in that history timeline some of the initial investigations and the soil removal actions. And in that yellow hatched box area in the corner there, you can kind of see the location of the initial soil removal action that happened in 2012, and so it kind of overlaps with that site. Next slide. So this slide shows the trash pile area, and similarly to the garden area, we have various injection points across the site, as well as highlighting again in the hatched yellow the soil removal area that occurred in 2012. So hopefully both figures provide an idea of, you know, like how many injection points we're kind of working with and we're conducting out there. Next slide. So as I mentioned earlier, the most recent round of injections included EVO with bioaugmentation. So perchlorate degrading bacterial culture was added to during the injection process to help speed up the remediation process. So, and soil samples from that round were collected in August 2025. The photo here illustrates the overview of the injection event and then the process of adding the bacterial culture to the injections. Next slide. So this slide provides an overview of the average perchlorate levels in soil from pre-injections to present day. So this figure also includes in the yellow lines, the yellow vertical lines, I mean, those are the injection events marked on there as well, so you could kind of get an idea of the trends post injection event and between injection events. So August 2025 soil sample results indicated that the perchlorate has decreased about 90% from the initial average concentration of 55 milligrams per kilogram to 6.2 milligrams per kilogram. But this still exceeds the preliminary cleanup level of 0.4 milligrams per kilogram. Based on these results, three or four additional water injection events will occur in the project site. And the most recent water injection event occurred in the week of October 13th. And the goal with that is to hopefully provide more of more moisture in the environment. We're thinking we're dealing with the dry climate in the desert, which it could be leading to some of the the results that we're seeing here. Next slide. This figure kind of provides a different look at looking at the perchlorate concentration averages. So this figure illustrates the perchlorate concentration distributed into low, medium, and then high perchlorate concentrations. So we're looking at 0.0 or 0 to 0.4 in the first group, and then 0.41 to 25, I mean, and then 26 to 450 in the high group. So the different colors, they represent time lapsed after the pre-injection average. So the pre-injection average we're looking at in the blue color. So I added these arrows on here to kind of give you an idea of what we're seeing in the perchlorate counts. So as you can see, we have an upward trend in the both the low and the medium perchlorate concentration counts. So that means we're seeing more low perchlorate concentrations compared to the high level group concentrations, which where we're seeing a downward trend. So this kind of illustrates the remediation has resulted in a decrease of the perchlorate over time. Next slide. Now that I've summarized, you know, the investigation and the remediation work carried out by under the SB 445 funding, I'll discuss some of the ongoing work for water board staff. So project oversight for water board staff involves plume monitoring via well sampling, overseeing the bottled water distribution in the area, and keeping up with community engagement. So next slide. Thank you. So since discovery of perchlorate in 2010, we have been periodically monitoring both the residential and groundwater monitoring wells in the area to monitor the plume movement. And, you know, I use that data to kind of put together, you know, that plume map that you guys are looking at in front of you there, too, or in the agenda package. So water board staff go out to the project area quarterly to sample both the monitoring wells and the residential wells. So the photo on the left is of City of Barstow staff who assist with our residential well sampling at the homes in that Soap Main Road area. And then we also coordinate with the City of Barstow to access their monitoring well network. So the photo on the right, you can see one of our staff people, Eileen Chea with the Wastewater and Agricultural Operations Unit, helping me take a water level at one of the monitoring wells during our sampling events. So, you know, we've treated this as a great like training opportunity for folks. A lot of the people in my division have assisted me, you know, with my groundwater sampling efforts. And I, you know, this honestly, it wouldn't really be possible without the help I get from other staff with me on this project. So I just wanted to throw some kudos in there for us. So next slide. For plume monitoring. So currently around 18 of the residential homes are impacted by the perchlorate at or above the MCL of 6 micrograms per liter. And I put together this little map based on our most recent sampling event for quarter three of 2025. Basically, these dots kind of show the distribution of our most recent subset of sampling. So out of the samples we collected, I kind of just wanted to hone in on the point that most of the perchlorate levels in the project area are between 6 to 100 micrograms per liter. Next slide. So again, this is our most current plume map, which illustrates how the plume has migrated from the source area southeast. So the direction of the plume migration matches a groundwater flow of the Mojave River down there. And residential wells over at risk of exceeding the MCL, or maximum contaminant limit, are monitored quarterly. So our leading edge of the plume remains undefined due to the lack of monitoring wells and residential wells in that area east of Marks Road and MW38 on the map here. And there are no known residents past that leading edge of the plume as well. Next slide. Bottled water. So residents in the area rely on private domestic wells, but replacement bottled water has been provided to residents that need or that meet disadvantaged community income eligibility requirements since 2011. Currently, 4 homes receive bottled water out of the 18 homes impacted by perchlorate. And the number of folks receiving bottled water really does fluctuate depending on residents moving in and out of the neighborhood and or residents becoming eligible for the bottled water service. But I do want to note that impacted residents that do not receive bottled water, they are notified if the water in their wells are, is not safe to consume. And then as of this month, an extension request has been submitted to State Board to extend funding for bottled water from June 2026 to June 2029. Funds for the bottled water contract were not used up during the contract period due to, again, only a handful of homes receiving bottled water at a time. And then, again, replacement bottled water has really remained the best option for safe drinking water for folks because there are not any division of drinking water approved point of entry or point of use systems that are certified to remove perchlorate. So really, bottled water is the best option here. Next slide. Community engagement. So paired with our sampling efforts, we strive to keep the community informed about our cleanup progress. When we receive sampling results from our quarterly sampling events, we send letters via email and or USPS mail, depending on homeowners' preference. Along with that, we also recently started this new GovDelivery email subscription service to kind of keep residents informed about cleanup efforts, sampling, any new geotracker page updates, and more. And then, for those who are interested, I have the QR code up here for people to sign up and receive updates on the Mojave River Pyrotechnics Project. On the side here, I have an example of an update I had sent out about remediation going on out there. So, kind of provide some photos and, again, keep the community informed. Next slide. Now that we summarized kind of all of the remediation work going on and the ongoing work, we're kind of looking forward. So for next steps, ongoing remediation evaluation and plume monitoring will occur, including monitoring our groundwater sampling, all of that. So one thing I do want to note is that we're working on with the State Board Division of Financial Assistance staff to develop a technical approach and detailed cost estimate for groundwater remediation for future funding. So again, right now we're focused on the soil remediation, so groundwater remediation will be our next phase, which is exciting. Next slide. Thank you for your time, and that concludes my presentation.
Great. Thank you, Melina, and I really appreciate the detailed explanation of some of the science stuff.
Sure.
Helps a lot, put it into vernacular terms. Well, I think the way we'll proceed here, because I think we do have some public comment on this one, I suspect, is we'll just do board questions, so just questions for staff, since Melina's standing in front of us, and then we'll go to public comment, and then we'll go back to board for either additional questions or comments or discussions, if that makes some sense. So why don't we start with Board Member Pierce. Any questions for staff on the presentation and the work?
I have no questions. Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you.
Board Member Horn, questions for staff?
Yes, I have some questions. Could we go back to slide number 7, please? It's titled Monitoring Well Installation and Tracer Tests. Thank you. So I want to focus on the Webster Road portion of this graphic, showing that sort of just up gradient from the Soap Mine Road development, in 2023, the concentrations of perchlorate in the groundwater were, I mean, there was a pretty sizable plume ranging from 6 micrograms per liter to 1,000 micrograms mm-hmm. per liter. As it gets treated there, like in our Hinckley example, then the water reaching them will be much lower in contaminant levels. But that portion of that plume is still moving through that Soap Mine Road development, as you could see on going to the next slide to pull up, which is number 19, I think, that says, well, it doesn't have a title on it. It's just before the bottled water. Next, keep going. There we go. So you can sort of see the dotted line where the plume still is. And as you said on maybe a prior slide, that the levels are going down. Most of the houses that are receiving bottled water or eligible are now further down gradient from the Webster Road wells. But I'm curious, you said the leading edge of the plume is not well defined. I'm curious what the land ownership continuing down gradient from the Soap Mine Road development, what the land ownership is. Is it public or private? If it's private, what's the zoning, i.e., could residential development occur in the area that the plume is moving into? And, that's basically my question.
Okay, thanks. Based on our understanding, the land past that leading edge of the plume is all privately owned. And the plume is moving towards that direction where, again, we don't have any residences there. I'm not too sure about whether or not those could be zoned into residential areas. But that is something that we can look into and follow up with. I think I kind of mentioned briefly, we are hoping to, with our further funding for the groundwater remediation efforts, that we're going to apply for funding for additional groundwater monitoring wells as well in those areas. So hopefully during those processes, we can kind of figure out a little bit more about the land ownership, like what's going on out in that area, but as well as getting more data and more information about where the perchlorate plume is headed into in that area. And, I appreciate your concern about, especially in that undefined area. That's one of our target areas we hope to get more information about.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, is there any possibility of putting any kind of land use controls in that area or so that develop, certain, I'm just concerned about mm-hmm. new developments happening, new residential wells being drilled and, expanding the the problem as it goes mm-hmm. further downstream. So land use controls or notification that there's a plume there, that kind of stuff. Can we do anything like that?
Yeah. So, we've come across this with people moving in and out of the property area, right? So it's like, whether they get notification about, that there's a perchlorate plume or a perchlorate issue in the neighborhood. Luckily we have a lot of great, field presence, I'll call it. A lot of our residents in the area are really looking out for, other people moving in. They're like, this plume issue. And, there's kind of been really word of mouth, letting them know this is an issue, but looking into, more formalized something like a LUC or some sort of announcement or something we could give folks moving into the area or considering building in the area is something that we would love to look into, and we'll follow up with you on that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the idea.
Board Member Deaver.
Yeah, I just had one question.
Sure.
The 18 homes that are above the 6 parts per billion, can they be serviced by Golden State Water? Is it or so far they can't be or they don't want to be?
Great question. it's a mixture of both. So Golden State Water's company service area, it kind of stops, we don't have the map up anymore, but it stops right before west of Soap Mine Road. So Golden State Water Company does not service in that area. So, there's been previous conversations way back before I even had this project really about, whether or not Golden State Water Company would service that area. I think there were some public meetings for folks who lived in the neighborhood and in that area about if they would consider connecting to Golden State Water Company. There was kind of mixed mixed reactions or mixed opinions of whether or not they want to connect. So I guess to answer your question, it is a possibility for Golden State Water Company to connect to that area. And I think looking forward in the future, that may be something we might bring up again with the residents, since it's been a while since we've brought up that.
Because how long would it take to clean that plume up where they could drink the water again under 6 parts per billion? That could take a long time.
Yeah, it could take a long time. And, again, we're only focused on the soil remediation right now. We haven't even moved on to groundwater yet. So investigating the groundwater, determining what remedial technology is best for the groundwater, how many locations of injections we want to do, how long do we want to do the injections, if that's our selected remedy. It's a lot of moving parts, and so I can't give you a great time frame really.
That's okay.
But a long time is my best answer.
It seems like the city water would make the property values go up and they could live there. All right. Well, thank you. Great presentation.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Member Cox.
Melina, thanks for that great presentation. You answered most of my questions I was jotting down as we went.
Awesome.
This really is a tragic issue for those homeowners there. I don't know how they can sell their properties, knowing that there is a plume there. They'd have to declare that. And what a huge loss of a lifetime investment that they've had in their properties. I wish there's so much more that we could do to help them in this situation. I do have a couple of questions. In the Hinckley area with the hexavalent chromium, we've had a lot of experience with remediation efforts. We had the whole house treatment systems that were tried at one point. Is there any solution that we may have learned about in that application that would work for these residents on Soap Mine Road?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of mentioned earlier there aren't any certified systems that are designed to treat perchlorate. So, those single point of use filtration systems or anything like that, it really isn't an option at this time, for folks, because, we could install a treatment, an RO reverse osmosis system, and then, maybe they could potentially see perchlorate levels decrease in their water, but again, it's not approved to remove perchlorate, so we don't really have any approved system that we can, you know, 100% confidently give folks and be like, hey, this is, you can use this and it'll treat the perchlorate, because there isn't anything like that that exists. And, you know, maybe down the line there'll be some technologies that'll hopefully technologies that we could apply and allow, you know, install those on people's properties. That could be a potential, but again, at this time, we don't have that option, so, unfortunately.
Would it be possible to do one pilot test at one residence and then test for perchlorate and see if it is reduced by an RO or some other form of treatment? I mean, we're not going to know until we put something in situ.
Yeah, that is true. We could look into that, and maybe we'll pilot testing different systems, like maybe it's not RO, maybe it's something else, and see, or different options, you know, and see what we get from that. But I really like that idea, actually.
Perchlorate in drinking water systems is not something you run across all the time, so it's understandable they haven't focused on a household remediation for that, but maybe there's something that already exists, like RO, that may be effective in that application. I think it'd be worth the effort there. Also, my last question, you mentioned something that kind of piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, you know, we're kind of dealing with the dry environment in our desert. You know, the old saying that the solution to pollution is dilution. Would focused groundwater recharge in this area help at all with remediating or diluting that plume?
Interesting. You know what? I would think so. I think it would, especially, okay, so let me see. Let me go back. We don't have great, like, vertical delineation of the plume itself, but we have kind of a pretty good grasp, like, horizontally of what it's, what we're looking at and, like, where the most of the perchlorate plume is sitting, like, vertically. I feel like, maybe dilute, or what is it?
Solution to pollution is dilution.
Yeah, a rising groundwater could help with that in the area.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's a potential.
That's all I had.
Yeah.
Just one, for me, one kind of simplistic, I guess, line of questioning. You mentioned that four of the residences currently receiving bottled water, of the 18, why not all 18? I mean, why not just play it safe? Or have people not wanted it? Or what's the reason for that?
Yeah, so State Board, they have certain disadvantaged community income guidelines where they have to meet in order to receive bottled water through the state. It's just how the grant funding works.
How the funding. And what's the ballpark annual budget for bottled water?
Oh, the annual budget?
Yeah, what kind of number are we talking about for how much budget has been available? I realize you're trying to get more money for that, but what's been the budget for that?
Yeah, so it's been it's around like
$30,000 per year?
Oh, no, not in total.
In total,
yeah.
Over the course of multiple
years?
Yeah,
multiple years in the contract year.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Well, let's. We may have some additional questions. We may bring you back up, but there's probably some public comment. I know we've got some public members here who want to speak. What do we have, Ariel, for public comment?
None on the Zoom platform.
Okay. Give us the rule here.
It helps in our record keeping, but if you don't want to make your name known, that's fine.
Can I fill it out when I'm done?
Yes. Yes.
Please, we appreciate it. Speak into the microphone, because that way it's recorded, and you've got about 5 minutes. Thank you.
One of the things that I did want to talk about is the limited bottled water. Now, you guys have to understand, we're the same people that live with the nitrate plume that was caused by the city of Barstow. So we've got both. We found out about the nitrates right around 2006, so most of us are like pros at this point. We all use bottled water for drinking, for cooking, for making coffee, ice, everything. We're really good about informing new people when they come into the neighborhood about how they need to make choices. But it has frustrated me endlessly for years that so many of us do not qualify for bottled water that have hyperchlorate levels because we work. We have an income. And my mom is 78 years old. She is right on Webster, pretty much where the worst of the plume comes across. Her perchlorate levels are over 200. She does not qualify for bottled water. And it's very, very frustrating. I understand that they're in a bind. Like, they're given rules around that to where, you know, they're like, you can't give, it doesn't matter if you have $30,000. If only four people qualify, those are the only people that can have the water. So that's very frustrating for us. The other thing that's frustrating, the city is required every quarter to test all of the wells out there for nitrate. The water board, they don't have the budget to do that. There's just a, they select pick based on where they think the plume is moving as to which residential wells get tested every quarter for perchlorate. So there's many people in our neighborhood that don't know what their perchlorate levels are or if they're anything because their wells don't get tested. Some of the wells like mine normally do get tested every quarter but for perchlorate, but that's because of where my well is located. So that's frustrating. There's not enough money in the budget for well testing, in my opinion. The test results, I know Melina talked about us receiving them, and that's very rare. We're lucky if we get quarterly test results for the perchlorate, like once a year. And over the years, there's been one span, and part of it's our fault because we don't pick up the phone and say, hey, can you guys send them out? But there was a two-year span where nobody was notified, and that's actually when the plume really exploded in our neighborhood, and we did not know. So if that could be improved, that would be wonderful. I've been told that there is a website called, I think it's Geo Tracker. It's very, very hard to maneuver. I've been dealing with this stuff since 2006 and have learned a lot. I have trouble on that website. I don't expect my neighbors to be able to figure it out. And even that is, it's really not updated on a regular basis. So even if I go look there, I usually cannot find the latest results. And selling property, that has been a problem with people not being forthcoming. Not all. Most all of our neighbors are fantastic people. We've all been there for decades. But we have had some, and what they do is most of our local realtors all know about the situation out there. So what they will do is they will go hire somebody from San Bernardino or Rancho Cucamonga or Los Angeles to sell their house. And they do not tell the realtor. And if we see a house go up for sale and we see that it's listed, we call the realtor. Hey, did you know? Because now they know. And if they don't disclose it, now they're in trouble. So we do try to keep on top of that, but that has been a problem. But I don't know how in the world you possibly notify potential buyers ahead of time, you know what I mean, that are coming to look at properties. I don't know how in the world you do that. But anyway, that's, and as for Golden State Water that has been offered to us, I don't remember there ever being a mixed reaction. I just asked Anna and Beth. Nobody wants it. No one. We want to have our private wells because we like that freedom. We live out there for a reason. And we know our water is contaminated. We know what we have to do to avoid the contamination. But we don't want Golden State Water because if our wells go down, we're not allowed to redrill. And the cost of water is going to skyrocket for us. So anyway, that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? I know we don't have any other cards. And perhaps you could fill out a card if you choose to. That would be helpful. Anyone else from the public? Yeah, no, we'll get back. Anybody else? Anyone online? Anyone on Zoom platform?
No.
All right, let's bring this back to the board. There may be further questions for Melina or further conversation. Board Member Cox, let's start with you.
Thank you.
I live in a rural area, and I have horses and chickens and all kinds of fun stuff. What do you do for your equine and livestock? I mean, they drink a lot of water, and you really don't want to give them contaminated water. Yeah.
Yeah, come on up and pop. Yeah, pop.
That's
the mic
a lot of water you'd have to buy to fill those troughs.
Well, for domestic animals, we give them bottled water because they're smaller. Everything's based on weight. You know, so like a horse is, what, Beth, 1,250 pounds? So they have a much higher tolerance. I mean, if you start getting into the thousands for perchlorate, which the well behind my mom's house is very shallow. And that's another thing, too. You know, it's all based on the way the well is constructed, where the screen is, where the pump is. Anyway, but so far we're just doing bottled water. I mean, just hose water, just well water for the larger animals, and everything seems to have been fine so far. Anything else, Beth? I mean, you know more about the horses even than I do.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what we've been doing.
Thanks. Thank you. Any further? Board Member Deaver?
No further questions.
Board Member Cox?
Comment.
Discussion. I'm sorry, Horn. I keep turning this way and going that way. Board Member Horn. Further discussion.
I have no further questions.
Board Member Pierce. I'm going to get this right. If I slow down, I'm going to get this right. Board Member Pierce. Any further discussion, comment, questions?
No, I have no further questions. Thank you.
I'm just going to go back to my bottle of water thing just one time, and I don't really have any questions. It just... It feels to me that $30,000 is actually quite a bit of money for bottled water. If you divide that by 18, I think $1,670 a year. Yeah, hang on one second. And I get I understand the qualification, the disadvantaged communities issue completely. It just seems in this case everybody's disadvantaged in a very real way. I'm just wondering if there's... I'm looking around. Ben, you got any ideas here? It feels like a relatively modest amount of funding we might be able to do, given that, you know, it costs a lot to do all these studies, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any way out of this box for the regional board or working with state board?
Yeah, thanks. Great question, Jeff. I was going to chime in anyway, but. I think that Jen and I, our assistant executive officer, this has been on our radar to perhaps meet with a Department of Financial Assistance to look at the criteria a little more closely. And if you know, certain residents don't meet the criteria for disadvantage, ask for an exemption, you know, of that for some period of time. This isn't something that we've looked into before, but we certainly can pursue that and see if we can't get an exemption either permanently or, you know, perhaps for some number of years.
Is there a responsible party on this one in some manner?
He's deceased.
Okay.
Yeah, there's the landowner who buried the material from the pyrotechnics business is deceased. Do we have an RP in this case for the perchlorate?
Melina, sorry for the back and forth.
No, you're great. So for this project, the RP is us because it's considered an orphan site. Again, property owner is deceased. So.
Thanks, understand.
Just to clarify, the state is not a responsible party, but we do assist the community because it's an orphan site.
Great. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you for that clarification.
And can I add one more thing, Jeff? With respect to the monitoring, we can look into, you know, perhaps expanding the monitoring sites. I will say that our budget has been cut a lot with all of the state budgets going around. Our monitoring budget has been reduced. But we can look into perhaps additional sites or sampling, you know, well, changing the frequency and the location of certain wells. And certainly we can do better in terms of providing anybody who would like to see the monitoring reports more frequently.
All right. Any other board comment on this one? It is informational only, but an important one. And it sounds like we've got a little bit of kind of direction, so to speak. So you guys can kind of keep looking into it. Appreciate that very much. All right. Thanks. Anything else? All right, I'm going to recommend we take a short break. We've got a couple items left, important ones, but only a few. It's 10:24. Let's come back at 10:35, and we'll resume with item 8. Yeah, it's at 10:35, 10 minutes. All right, the board is back in session. Everyone is back, I believe, looking for confirmation on Mr. Pierce at home. There he is. Hi, sir. How are you doing?
I'm here. I'm doing well.
Everything good? Okay. All right, we are on item 8, which is the executive officer's report. And Ben Letton, I will turn it over to you, and you can take it away.
Good morning, board members, members of the public. My name is Ben Letton. I'm the assistant, or sorry, I am the executive officer, and I'm about ready to introduce the assistant executive officer officially at our board meeting, and I'll be providing you with item 8, the executive officer report. Can I get the slide deck, please, AGP? All right, you can go ahead and go to the next slide. So I'm going to invite our new Assistant Executive Officer, Jan Zimmerman, up to the podium here, and she's going to provide us with an update on an all-staff meeting that we had in Bishop in October. So go ahead, Jan.
Good morning. I'm Jan Zimmerman, Assistant Executive Officer, and thank you so much. This morning, I want to share with you some highlights of the face-to-face all-staff that we had in Bishop October 7, 8, and 9th of this year. This is the first face-to-face since we've had since October of 2022, and it was a great turnout. We had 66 of our 77 staff in attendance. It was fantastic. It was an opportunity for relationship building during and after business hours, camaraderie, and solidifying trust within the organization. So this photo is everyone that attended. We gathered on day 2 at the Bishop City Park Pavilion, and thank you, Alonzo Poach, for bringing your tripod so we could get this great photo. Next slide, please. So on day 1, we gathered at the Tri-County Fairgrounds for what we call a 4R day. 4 R's are reflect, release, recalibrate, and results. The focus for that day was on psychological safety and trust. We had some great conversation and committed ourselves to a number of behavioral norms to support psychological safety, including being a good listener and not being judgmental of others, having a student mindset. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. It's okay. Help others to see each other's strengths and celebrate wins when we have them. Respond constructively to bad news and encourage others to think beyond their roles. Later in the afternoon, we heard from Acting Chair Rob Pierce. He gave us an overview of the Pierce family history and their homesteading in the Owens Valley. Next slide. All right. Day 2 was dedicated to training. The first half of the day was hands-on field training in 3 categories: surface water sampling, groundwater sampling, and field equipment. We set up training stations at the Bishop City Park and broke everyone into 3 groups of about 20 people, and those groups rotated amongst the 3 training stations and lasting about 30 minutes at each station. So it was really a whirlwind of a day. In this photo on the left is Kelly Huck. She's our regional monitoring coordinator, and she's demonstrating the proper way to collect a water sample in a creek. The surface water sampling team also went over how to use our YSI water quality meters for field parameters and the importance of chain of custody documentation when we collect our samples. The middle photo is Shelby Barker, our enforcement coordinator, showing the group a mock monitoring well that her husband constructed, by the way, and discussing how well construction, good and bad techniques, can affect the integrity of a well. The groundwater sampling team also had a station set up to practice using a water level probe to measure depth to groundwater and to practice collecting samples in the glass VOA vials. The photo on the right is the field equipment station. We learned how to use rangefinders, measuring wheels, and everyone practiced calculating their pace so that we can all estimate distances in the field. Next slide. In the afternoon on day two, and yes, we did have more time, we returned to the fairgrounds for a classroom exercise to apply the field training we just learned about. Tech staff worked through four different scenarios related to performing inspections and responding to spills and complaints. Each scenario had an answer key so that we could get real-time feedback on whether we were on the right track with the scenarios. During this time in the afternoon, the admin team took the opportunity to break away from the larger group and hold a specific workshop focused on communication. We also had a preview of the photographs that were submitted for our second ever photo contest. The entry rules are that it must be a photo within Lahontan, the photo must capture one or more beneficial uses, and the photo shown here is Hot Creek, and it shows commercial, sport fishing, warm freshwater habitat, and wildlife habitat beneficial uses. So we're going to vote on all the photos that have been submitted for the contest, and the three winning photos will be printed on canvas or poster board and will adorn the walls of our offices. So we rounded out the day with Mary Fiore Wagner presenting a Superior Accomplish Award to Ed Hancock for his efforts to initiate and follow through on a water quality investigation following a sewage spill to Lake Tahoe. His investigation led to public health protection for visitors and community members recreating at a popular Lake Tahoe beach. Ed's work was critical to protect public health and safety, and we're pleased that we were able to recognize him for his efforts in this way. Next slide. Day three is what we were calling Hike for Mike. We dedicated it to Mike and reflecting on the legacy that he left us, his leadership that he practiced every day, and the influence that he had in shaping our organization that we know today. We gathered at the South Tufa Interpretive Trail at Mono Lake. This location was fitting because of his passion for Mono Lake, his admiration and respect for the Kutsetika tribe, and his steadfastness to work with the tribe to develop cultural beneficial uses specific to the lake and its tributaries. We gathered at the trailhead, and Mary Fiore Wagner said some kind words before we walked down to the shoreline. The Tufa is amazing at this location if you haven't been there. You get right close and personal, and the brine flies were just swarming. It was amazing. You can see from those photos that it was just the most amazing day to be at Mono Lake with all of our work friends. Next slide. The All Staff was such a success, and that's because of the planning and work that everybody put into it. I'd like to give a special shout out to the trainers that planned and executed the hands-on field training. I've listed everybody's name here, and I'm going to read them. For the field trainers, we had Abby, Elena, Kelly, Amanda, Molina, Shelby, Lorian, Christy, Brian, Anna, Sabrina, Jen, and Carrie. Thank you so much. The classroom exercises were Reggie, Jim, Kristen, Jeff, Alonzo, Trevor, Sergio, Christina, Taylor, and Andy. Thank you. The admin workshop was a great success. Our admin team, Eric, Sandra, Margot, Amber, Ariel, Mark, Jasmine, and Cynthia. Thank you. And to the management team, Ben, Mary, TJ, and myself for helping facilitate and plan and execute and make it happen. So to close this item out, I just want to share with you some quotes of what we've heard from staff. It was the best all staff ever. I enjoyed getting to see everyone in person and connecting as more than just a coworker. The hike for Mike was awesome. Connecting with teammates, one region. So I think we've set the bar for the next one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan. Most of the credit in terms of the management team go to Mary, TJ, and Jan for putting this together. They did the bulk of the work, and it was a great all staff, the best that I've ever been to as well. So next slide. Okay, so here we have a personnel update. We have Jan Zimmerman, a promotion to assistant executive officer, yay. New hires, Michael Perez, who's actually in the building right now in the back. Can you raise your hand, Michael? All right. He's the new senior for our cannabis program, which is now going to be located out of the Victorville office. We have two technical staff to hire now to make that program whole again. So that program is on the way back. In terms of separations and retirements, Ezra Mustafavi, board member, is no longer with us. And Brian Judge retired. Brian had worked for TRPA for many years and then had a second career with Lawton. And he's amazing and will be missed, especially cruising around on his electric skateboard. In terms of vacancies, we have an environmental scientist for the cannabis unit. I just mentioned that, as well as a water resource control engineer. I'm also in the recruitment stage right now for an executive assistant. Jan has a supervising engineering geologist vacancy in her in the Victorville office that she's also actively recruiting for. We also have a water resource control engineer in the regulatory enforcement unit and an environmental scientist vacancy in the planning and assessment unit. Next slide. Okay, so in your board packet are a number of reports. You have your July, August, and September EO reports in your board packet, starting on base stamp 8-1. And I'm just going to sort of highlight a couple of articles here. There are so many great articles, I feel like, in those reports. I can't touch on all of them, but I'm going to touch on a couple of select articles that I think may have interest to the board. So the first one is titled Chino Basin Water Master Field Tour Ties to Mojave Basin One Water Concept. This is a joint effort by Anna Garcia, Reggie Tan, Jan Zimmerman, and Lorian Sanders. It's on base stamp 8-6. And what this article summarizes is a field tour that occurred on July 21st. Staff from the Lawton Water Board, Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority, City of Victorville, and Mojave Water Agency participated in a Chino Basin field tour hosted by the Chino Basin Water Master. The tour focused on the Chino Basin groundwater recharge program, including stops at the Chino Basin Water Master groundwater recharge facilities, the Chino Basin Water Conservation District Waterwise Community Center, and the Prado Basin Habitat Area. The tour aimed to foster support for the Mojave Basin One Water Concept, which promotes integrated management of various water sources to optimize use, improve water quality, and ensure a reliable supply. The tour was coordinated by VVWRA General Manager Darren Paulson, who previously served as the Chino Basin Water Master. So we are cautiously optimistic as the Mojave Basin One Water Concept evolves. Special attention and consideration should be given to how the project may affect site cleanup and remediation efforts, as this project will influence groundwater elevation and flow direction. Also, downstream effects along the Mojave River, including groundwater supply and recharge for downstream communities, should be carefully evaluated. We are optimistic that a more integrated partnership to manage recycled water supply could be beneficial to the Mojave Basin. The next article is about the Leviathan Mine tour with the Washoe tribe. This is on bait stamp 8-11. So the Leviathan Mine Cleanup Unit hosted the annual Washoe Tribal Leadership Tour on July 10th. 28 people attended the meeting, including US EPA, Water Board staff, Atlantic Richfield consultants, Washoe Tribe representatives, and the Washoe Environmental Protection Department. The discussion include topics such as ongoing investigations, cleanup work, and future remedial actions to improve water quality. The next article I want to touch on is on bait stamp 8-12. It's Mountain Pass Mine, A Short History of Future Outlook by Andrew Robinson. A great article written by Andy, we call him, that provides a historical perspective of Mountain Pass Mine. Mountain Pass Mine was established in 1870, initially focused on various minerals, but later became significant for its rare earth elements, or REEs, production, especially during the Cold War. I learned that REEs are used in all types of products, including lighter flints, ultraviolet blocking glass, television components, phones, and other electronic devices, and numerous military applications, including high-powered magnets. The mine faced environmental issues and international competition, leading to suspending operations in 2002, and attempts to revive the mine were made by Molycorp and then Mountain Pass Materials with varying degrees of success. But then in 2025, Mountain Pass Materials partnered with the U.S. Department of Defense to strengthen the domestic REE supply chain with significant investments to expand production and reduce reliance on foreign sources. So this is a complex site with a lot of water quality challenges based on a layered history of operations and ownerships at the site, and Water Board staff are expecting rapid expansion of the on-site facilities that could have impacts on water quality. So staff and Mountain Pass Materials are committing to improving communication and collaborating so we can stay on top of expansion efforts developing at the site. Next slide. So this is the August EO report and some select articles. The first one is a standing item on Lake Tahoe water quality update from 2025 by Ed Hancock. This is on bait stamp 8-26. So this executive officer report provides an update on the Lake Tahoe water quality during the past year. As a reminder, together with Nevada Department of Environmental Protection, the Water Board administers the Lake Tahoe TMDL, which is a water quality improvement program designed to restore Lake Clarity to 1967, early 70s conditions of 97.4 feet. In addition to TMDL administration, the Water Board facilitates several long-term water quality and water clarity monitoring programs at Lake Tahoe, provides funding for the Lake Tahoe water quality science and research, and continues to engage stakeholders and the public regarding Lake Tahoe water quality. Notables from this article: the 2024 annual average clarity was 62.3 feet, which is 6 feet less than it was in 2023. As a reminder, clarity is affected by fine sediment particles suspended in the water column, as well as biological processes related to algae, nutrients, plankton, and deep water mixing that brings very clear water up from the bottom of the lake. Generally, winter clarity has been better than summer clarity, and annual clarity has generally stabilized over the last decade. In the nearshore environment, water quality at Lake Tahoe has generally been good, although we do see some seasonal impacts from algae blooms, aquatic invasive species, and additional impacts from things like sewage leaks, spills, and nutrient inputs from stormwater. On the TMDL side of things, in 2024, the urban implementers were awarded over 3,600 credits, which equates to an estimated $727 1,000 pounds of fine sediment particles prevented from entering Lake Tahoe. Loads of nitrogen were reduced by 5,800 pounds and loads of phosphorus by 2,100 pounds. Load reductions from urban implementers represented 29%, 23%, and 17% reduction in pollutant loads from the 2004 baseline levels. And all those reductions constitute about 25% more pollutant reduction in urban categories compared to the year prior in 2023. On the water quality monitoring and water quality condition side of things, this article describes how Senate Bill 630 funding to support several monitoring programs and investigations and investigation response by staff. An example of that in terms of investigation and response by staff was last year there was an intense storm at Lake Tahoe that required staff to go out and conduct inspections of many of our marinas that underwent a lot of damage from that storm. And in addition, there was a small sewage issue at Camp Richardson, which Jan referred to earlier, for which Ed Hancock responded. And there's a really detailed account of that investigation starting on Bait Stamp E-28 in your packet. With respect to agency partners and integration of expertise, we continue to coordinate and discuss really complex issues at Lake Tahoe with the Tahoe Science Advisory Council. In 2024, we were able to provide funding for two peer-reviewed monitoring programs, and we continue to provide funding to support implementation of several monitoring programs, including our Nearshore Network, which is a network of continuous monitoring devices around Lake Tahoe, so Nearshore. And we have directed funding to review the Lake Clarity Crediting Program, which has been instrumental to achieve pollutant load reduction since adoption of the Tahoe TMDL. So with that, I'd like to invite another staff person up to the podium, Shelby Barker. Shelby wrote a nice article in the August EO report. She's going to cover that, and then she's going to talk about our second quarterly violations and unauthorized discharge report.
Could we ask questions, Chair, of the material that's been presented in the EO report so far?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Let's do that. I was going to save it all at the end, but sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So I was surprised to hear recently or to read recently that Tahoe City PUD has received a grant or upgraded a treatment plant. I believe it was in Chambers Landing. And I had always understood that way back when Charles Goldman was tackling the Clarity in Lake Tahoe, that one of the first things that was done was all sewage was transported out of the basin. So I was surprised to hear that there was a sewage treatment plant at Chambers Landing. So can you clarify what that plant in Chambers Landing is doing and what happens to the sewage that is treated there?
I don't know if TJ has, I'm familiar with the ribbon cutting ceremony and the awarded money, but I don't know if you have familiarity with the facility there.
If I'm thinking of the right facility, I think it's actually a water treatment plant for water supply.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because there were a few privately owned water treatment companies that were of questionable quality. So, okay, that makes more sense. Thank you.
Do other board members have questions before Shelby comes up? Rob, others? Okay.
No.
Thanks.
A lot shorter. Okay. can we go to the next slide? It should be. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Shelby Barker. I'm Senior Engineering Geologist and the Enforcement Coordinator for our region. In your packet, beginning on Bait Stamp 8-30, is the second quarter 2025 violations and unauthorized discharge report and the associated article. During the second quarter, there were 39 violations identified, including 11 unauthorized discharges. Four of those discharges were at regulated facilities, and the remaining seven were at unregulated facilities. All 11 of the unauthorized discharges had either coordinated cleanup and is still ongoing, or the cleanup efforts have been completed. Some additional updates that relate to the other article that have occurred this past summer. We had a settlement agreement for expedited payment that had been adopted. This order was issued to address $6,000 for mandatory minimum penalties, or MMPs, at Tahoe Keys Marina. These MMPs were for effluent exceedances and stormwater discharged to Lake Tahoe. That was summarized briefly in the article with the quarterly violations report. Also, as summarized in the EEO article beginning on bait stamp 8-24, we've recently adopted two additional settlements for administrative civil liabilities, or ACL, which I'll briefly summarize. The first one is the Coldstream Planned Community. Coldstream Planned Community is a private development located in Truckee. The Lahontan Water Board's prosecution team reached settlement with the developer, Stonebridge Properties, LLC, and their contractor, Tigert Construction, to address violations of the construction general permit. The ACL is for $917,199, of which $472,199 was paid to the state water pollution cleanup and abatement account. The remaining $445,000 will be permanently suspended upon completion of their Donner Creek Restoration Supplemental Environmental Project, or SEP. This SEP will be used for restoration activities at three sites along Donner Creek to improve water quality, improve stream and riparian habitat, and protect existing infrastructure. Details for each of these sites are located on bait stamp 8-25. And the other one, Lahontan Water Board's prosecution team also reached settlement with North Tahoe Public Utility District, or NTPUD, and California Department of Transportation, or Caltrans, for violations associated with the raw sewage spill to the North Shore at Lake Tahoe. On July 18, 2024, a subcontractor was working on a Caltrans project in Carnelian Bay and accidentally punctured a 24-inch diameter sewer force main that is owned by NTPUD. This resulted in an estimated 122,800 gallons of raw sewage being spilled between two sites. At the main site, approximately 85,000 gallons reached Lake Tahoe at Carnelian West Beach. The settlement agreement is for $850,000, of which $5,000 was paid to the state water pollution cleanup and abatement account. The remaining $845,000 will be permanently suspended upon completion of the Seakine Beach SEP. This SEP is located in a severely disadvantaged community and will address environmental concerns and safety concerns related to lack of available public restrooms, proper waste disposal facilities, and drinking water supply. Presently, the only available service at this beach are a few seasonally placed porta potties at the beach. This SEP will fund construction of public restrooms connected to NTPUD's sewer system, installation of trash receptacles, and drinking fountains available to public. It will also address stormwater runoff concerns by implementing erosion and sediment control measures as the site improvements. Thank you.
Thanks, Shelby. Ben, you want to keep going?
Yeah, unless there's any questions for any this would be a good point to ask, Shelby.
Okay. Okay.
Great work, Shelby, and great update. Thank you. Next slide. Okay, moving along. So your September EO report has an article titled Fiscal Year 24-25 Climate Change Annual Report. That's on bait stamp 8-53 in your packet. This is our annual update to the board on our climate change strategy and action plan that was adopted in 2019. In past years, we brought this annual update to the board in the form of an informational item led by our regional monitoring coordinator. Lori Screeb just recently promoted to senior of the non-point source unit. So this vacancy, this created vacancy with a regional monitoring coordinator. Thus, we're bringing it to you as an article this year. We'll get back on track with an informational item starting again next year. This annual report includes actions completed in fiscal year 24-25 in table one of this article. It includes updating our program plan for our swamp program with some emphasis in adjustments to monitoring to answer some critical climate change related questions and concerns. It also includes work that we've been doing with our internal aquatic invasive species work group, our development of supplemental environmental projects, which Shelby just touched on, and also approving 5 board orders that addressed one or more of the 4 policy statements in our climate change strategy, and that's on table 4 on page stamp 55. Table 2 are the proposed actions for the coming fiscal year, and then table 3 is statewide climate-related updates. This includes things like the California 5th Climate Assessment that started in 2022 with a final report expected in 2026, and also some developments with the California Water Supply Strategy with establishment of regulations in October 2024, which allow more direct potable use of recycled water. The next article is titled Lahontan Executive Staff Engage in Regional Septage Disposal Issues in Inyo and Mono County. That's on bait stamp 8-56. So Jan and I attended a Bishop Area Wastewater Authority meeting, BAWA meeting, in mid-September. At the meeting, BAWA directors agreed to include consideration of septage receiving capacity in a long-term wastewater treatment plant planning and design, both as a contingency redundant system as an opportunity to serve broader needs in the area. We will continue to stay engaged in this issue through our work with Inyo County at the Bishop Sunland Landfill, Mono County and the Mammoth Community Water District, and both the City of Bishop and Eastern Sierra Community Service District in their capacity and role in the Bishop Area Wastewater Authority, or BAWA. And the final article is titled Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program Bioassessment. It's on bait stamp 8-57. This article was actually written by State Water Board staff in the swamp program, but it does feature several pictures of our staff in it. Our swamp staff have been very active in the bioassessment program. So thank you to our staff for that. Check that article out if you haven't seen it. And then I wanted to direct your attention to bait stamp 8-71. So this is our list of standing items for 2025, and I just wanted to make note of a couple of adjustments. So first, about two-thirds of the way down, there's the cannabis update, which states to postponed to October. So given that we're just bringing the program back online, we'd like to postpone that article until October, which means that you'll be, you know, receiving a digital copy from Ariel in your email, and also that would appear in the board packet for the February meeting. Likewise, for the Leviathan Mine update, that one's actually on track for October. You can disregard the parentheses there that says postponed to February. That just means that it's going to appear in your board packet for February. And then for the harmful algal bloom, we'd like to push that one to December. It will also appear in your February board packet, but we found that the monitoring season perhaps is extended now into November sometimes. And so we need a little extra time to collate the information so that we can give you guys a good report. So just a little adjustments there just to make note of. And then the last page in your board, this item, is just a list of the upcoming board items for February in Barstow, April in Bishop, and May in Adelanto. That concludes my report. Any
Thanks so much, Ben. Any board questions or comments? Let's start with Board Member Pierce. Any questions, comments for Ben and his various reports?
No questions or comments, but thanks, Ben, for all the information. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks to Rob again for coming to our all-staff meeting and the great presentation you provided. I took a picture of you when you weren't looking, so.
Uh-oh. Yeah,
thanks,
well,
Rob.
I really enjoyed doing that. It was fun. I appreciate the offer to come and talk.
Yeah.
Board Member Horn, Amy?
Yeah, I have a request to make regarding the climate change annual report, and that is to, the understanding of the connection between water quality and headwater forests and resiliency has expanded since we adopted those four policies. And the fourth policy to be in line with current scientific understanding should read protection of headwater forests and promoting watershed resiliency, not just fire resiliency. Fire is not the only disturbance that is affecting water quality in watersheds. And so it requires taking a broader look at what's going on in watersheds than just fire hazard.
Okay, noted.
Thank you.
Anything else? Board Member Deaver.
Thank you for the presentation. No questions.
Board Member Cox.
No questions
on my end. I just want to congratulate everybody, all the people who worked on it and the staff, the 66 who came, management, Jan, Ben. That face-to-face looked great. I wish I'd have been there, but I wasn't. But it looked awesome, the trainings, everything. So, yeah, well done on that. It's you got to do it, and I know it's hard to take 3 days out of, or almost more than 3 days. So appreciate that very much. Good work. Have to do it. All right, that concludes item 8, Executive Officer's Report. We are on to item 9, which is the 2026 board meeting schedule, and we have the schedule. The board will consider approving it. Is there any discussion about this, or can we move to a motion? Start looking to my right. Any Board Member Cox, discussion, questions?
I have several conflicts, but I've provided those to staff, and if they work out, great. If not, then we'll just run with it.
Yeah. Board Member Deaver?
Yeah, no.
Board Member Horn?
I have nothing.
Board Member Pierce?
I have one potential conflict, but hopefully it'll work out. That's the February meeting. But we'll just go forward with it.
Okay, and I have none as well. Entertain a motion.
I'll move approval of the calendar.
I second that motion.
Board Member Pierce?
Aye.
Board Member Horn?
Aye.
Board Member Deaver?
Aye.
Board Member Cox?
Aye.
Board Member me? Aye. I don't know. What are you supposed to say? I just say aye. Aye. Okay, it passes. This is a new thing for me. Okay. The final item is one that it's about the board chair and vice chair selection process. We are not going to be either nominating or voting for a chair or a vice chair today, but this is an opportunity for us to kind of preview and see if we want to do any process and if we need to do anything in preparation for February, the February meeting, where we will need to both nominate and vote on both chair and vice chair. And so what I want to do is open it up for some discussion, but I thought we might start, and it might save some time because we're not a full board yet, and just asking if anyone, let's just talk about chair, really, because I think that's the key. Do we want to just see if anyone has any interest? Because if we've only got one or two, it could be a fairly simple one. If all five of us want to do it, we may want to have a process. Is that a fair question?
I'd like to go first, if I may, just because it will affect the subsequent discussion, which is that when I get home from this board meeting, I'm going to resign from the Lahontan board. And I would like to explain why, if you want to hear why.
Sure.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when I first got, so there is a 50... There's a requirement that a board member live 50 miles away from a meeting site in order to get reimbursed for travel. And when I first got to the board, it was back in the days when you wrote down odometer readings. And the distance from my house, reading my odometer, driving to South Lake Tahoe, going to the hotel, going to the meeting, going to dinner, and then going back home, it exceeded 50 miles for each trip. So for the last, but there's Google Maps now, and the state board has gotten much stricter, and my house technically is about 45 miles, according to Google Maps, from the office. So Katrina and Ariel and Ben have been putting in a lot of time and finding loopholes and trying to get me reimbursed for the cost of traveling to South Lake Tahoe for a board meeting. And they went even to the lengths of suggesting to the travel office that if there was a field trip to Leviathan, that would that make the trip for me down to the area qualify? And the answer was no. So that leaves me with two options. One is to pay out of pocket for the cost of hotel and food in South Lake Tahoe, which, as we all know, is very expensive, and I simply can't afford to do that. So my other option is to drive back and forth every day for a board meeting, if there's a two-day board meeting. It means getting up very early in the morning. There are no alternatives. Either you go by the West Shore or you go by the East Shore. In the wintertime, you can't even go by the West Shore because the road is closed at Emerald Bay. And between traffic getting to ski areas and congestion in the summer from visitors and construction and infrastructure, it often takes me 2 hours one way to get from Truckee to, I mean, it's a two-lane road. There are no options for me. What that means, and I've commuted between, I had a job at the Tahoe Conservancy for a short while and did that commute on a daily basis, and I know it's exhausting and stressful, and I just don't think that I could be the kind of board member I want to be under those conditions. So what does that do? It's not just me that this is causing, as I said, Ariel, Katrina, and Ben have been putting in a lot of time trying to figure out workarounds. If we only have one-day meetings in South Lake Tahoe, that's one option, or that things are scheduled so that only items that require a board decision are on one day, so I only have to attend one day. Anyway, it just gets very complicated and could affect board members, too, if we're only having one-day meetings in South Lake Tahoe. So my time as a board member has come to an end. I just can't do it anymore.
Okay, thanks, Amy, for that. Not thanks for the content, but appreciate you letting us know. So I'll look back to, maybe I'll start with, let's kind of go down the line here. Just any discussion about this item at all, Board Member Pierce, and I think out of curiosity for us for February, whether you have interest in being a chair or not, and I'll look to Board Member Pierce first.
So I've pretty much made it clear that I really don't want to, but if my name got nominated, I could probably pull it off, but I'd rather somebody else do it.
Fair enough.
The time commitment's huge.
Fair enough, Board Member Deaver. Just anything really, not just necessarily a disclosure.
Really close, but yeah, no, I'm not going to do it.
How close? No,
I quit.
Board Member Cox.
Well, thank you for that. As you all know, I will not be seeking reappointment, so September will be probably my last meeting unless Ben needs me to stay on for that obligatory 90-day period. I can do that as well, but I do not desire to hold the gavel. I think it's really important just for the collaboration and the growth of each of the board members that position be shared. And, Jeff, you or Rob, I think would do great. I think Rick would do great. So I would support any one of the three of you. Our numbers are dwindling here, but yeah, pick the short straw.
Right. And I would probably echo Rob's comments. I certainly was not looking to do that. I would probably do it if it needed to be done, either as an acting, but I'm not looking for it either. Anyway, that's that piece. So do we want to set up any sort of process, possibilities of subcommittees? There's various things we can do. I'm inclined to suggest we don't need it. I think we'll be fine in February, assuming we can have a quorum. We'll be okay. and we'll be, assuming we can get a quorum.
So
we will be okay.
For you, you've done such a good job today. I mean, well, it's pretty clear cut to me.
I vote for Jeff.
You should have messed up.
There's still time.
There's no time left.
What can I do to ensure my lack of nomination? Well, okay, I don't think we're in a place where we need a subcommittee or special process. I think we may think about it. Obviously, we need to get serious on our recruiting efforts to fill our board because we just lost Ezra and now we're about to lose Amy and then we're going to lose Kimberly. So we're dwindling quickly. So,
Jeff, we do have Cheyenne possibly coming on. She's in the middle of her interview process now, so I hope she gets the nomination.
Oh, great. Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for that. We, a couple of us had a chance to meet her. We all had a chance to see her at that meeting she came to. So thanks, Rob. All right. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Anything, Dan, Elizabeth, Jan, anything else? Board members? No?
I think we can just announce that there is going to be no closed session at this meeting.
Thank you. Yeah, item 11, closed session. We don't have closed session, so we will not be adjourning to closed session. We'll be adjourning the board meeting until February. All right, the meeting is adjourned.